This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich. I am joined by Mr. Adam Murray, who's so much older than me, maybe by a year, as we celebrate this old NBA team, this old NBA season. It's the 75th anniversary. It feels old.
You know, back in my days, college players played for 4 years, and if you were really good, you'd play for 3 years. None of this one-and-done stuff.
That's your old man voice?
Pepperidge Farm remembers.
Yeah, the Diamond season, as they're going to be calling it. Maybe they should have Neil Diamond perform at the Cleveland All-Star Game this year. Maybe bring in Diamond Dallas Page. I don't know. Whatever. None of
Justin
those jokes.
Diamond? Oh, wait, no, he's...
You know, I was looking at the history a little bit, and there were two major mergers, because they were talking about, oh, the Raptors and the Knicks are going to be rechristening the very first NBA game, because it was Toronto versus New York in, like, the 19-whatevers. And it's like, really? I'm pretty sure the Raptors started playing in 1995. But so it was the BAA and the NBL in 1950. Then it was the NBA and the ABA. And maybe I'll go into your wheelhouse with this one. I know David Stern wanted to dabble into a Spanish expansion team. Do you think there's ever a possibility that NBA and EuroLeague could come to an agreement where one of their major clubs can play regularly in the NBA? Do you think that'll ever happen? Or do you think coronavirus killed that?
No, it didn't kill it. It's just you can't do that. And like same thing with NFL and having a European team. It's just you can't do it based upon travel alone. You can't have...
I don't even know if NFL is doing the London thing this year. Are they?
I think they still are.
I'd have to look into it. I know they were really doubling down on it the last few years where they were like, they're visiting every other week.
And that's, you know, like we had mentioned it on one of the many, many previous episodes. It's like, you're adding a 17th game. Why not just make that 17th game just an international game everywhere? Every team goes to Europe. You take a week break after. You have sort of a halftime season reset. Do something. But no, let's, okay, you're going over to Europe. It's just, the problem with that is, especially for the NBA, it creates a logistical nightmare. So you can't have a team based in Spain play, okay, Lakers, you need to go fly 12 hours to Spain. And then two days later, we need you to go to Miami.
And your divisional symmetry is gone, so you got to kind of lump them into something. But, you know, money talks, and, you know, more games equals more revenue. That's why there's a 17th game in the NFL now, which is wow. And that, but then we're also going back to 82 after having 72 games due to a lot of the hurrying up the next season after the bubble. So kind of getting back into the normal routine. So when we do our over-unders, I will tell people up front, like when we preview these teams, I'm going to tell you what their win percentage was last year, because if they had that win percentage, this is how many games they would have won in 82 games. So that's kind of something weird. It's like, so if you look at the win totals for some of these teams last year, and then you look at the over-unders, that's deceptive, because you're going to say, oh, that seems like they're not going to reach that. And it's like, yeah, but they can, because they're playing 10 more games than they did last year. You know, so there's just a few things that you got to get out of the way with that. But we're here in the mezzanine level. Can you describe the mezzanine to me?
It's the fancy lobby. You're not in the lobby.
Is that the suite?
You know, you are overlooking the lobby. You are looking down upon it. However, you are not on the upper floors. You are sort of that transitional period. You know, you're still in the main level. You're sort of the private sectioned off area.
You're not on paper. It's not a floor. It's like an add-on that they elevate or stilt. I don't think I've ever been in a mezzanine room in a hotel, unless they add a balcony to make it seem fancier and have more access. I don't know. I've been in so many hotels in my life.
Yes, you being the world traveler that you are.
Well, not like you. You've probably been in some crazy hotel in Amsterdam that nobody's ever heard of. So.
No, I'm just going to flat out no sell that one.
You're just going to no sell it. I don't know. What's the furthest place you've ever traveled?
The furthest place is Hong Kong.
Oh, that's far. Were you on the mezzanine in Hong Kong?
No, the Hong Kong was a fun. We went there and there was a badminton tournament, and all the badminton players were at our hotel. So we went to the little arena right across the street.
Did they practice in one of those ballrooms?
No, it was just the lobby, and they're all out there, you know, checking their equipment, sort of, you know, just doing. It was just funny because it was like, you know, it's badminton, so you don't have big fancy locker rooms. They're just all in the lobby of the hotel, just getting all their stuff out. And Hong Kong was definitely weird.
I'll tell you a weird thing as I bang on my table. The ballroom, I gotta say, it's the ballroom situation with the NBA. Did you think that? I mean, I know they had to make it work. I actually stayed at the hotel where a lot of the media members stayed, Coronado Springs in Orlando. That became infamous because that was the site of the recording with Rachel Nichols and ESPN that turned into a big social media wildfire over comments she made about Maria Taylor, a situation where I don't think anyone won. But I did stay at that hotel this summer. It's a very nice hotel.
Well, it's not like they're going to have them stay at terrible, dumpy places.
I don't know if the players were at Coronado. I can't. I'm going to have to actually look up the details.
No, weren't they? They were at a couple ones because it was the good teams were at the good hotels.
Y World Sports is the hotel closest to that area. So I would have to assume they stayed there and carded and made the media members stay at other places. Like, I highly doubt they stayed at Pop Century. I'll just put it that way. Pop Century is like, have you ever seen that movie, The Florida Project, where it's like kids who are right outside of Disney World just trying to like bum money off of people? They go to Pop Century for that. Because that's where the lesser thens go. Coronado is a little bit beefier in terms of price. So it's nice. It's nice. But
okay, Mr. Rockefeller. Stay at the fancy hotels. Just a quick
for a sports arena. I have been in the mezzanine. My cousin, just to show you how Rockefeller I really am, he had season tickets in the 2009 season for the Hornets. This was the year after they went to the second round and Paul was the runner up for MVP in his third year and everything. And he let me go to the games that he can go to. And I was at the mezzanine. It's a nice little kosher place. You know, you get a nice, you have these little food booths where nobody else has access to and stuff. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, but you're there. It's not the luxury suites though. And just a quick thing about Hong Kong before we get into it. We took a cab back and, you know,
this is an NBA podcast, Adam. You have to be careful what you say about Hong Kong.
Hong Kong is not mainland China yet. We were getting a cab ride. English is the official language, but nobody speaks it. Mm-hmm. So all our cab driver would say is like, you like wrestling? And he would just name wrestlers like, oh yeah, Hulk Hogan. Yeah, we liked Hulk Hogan. Oh yeah, Macho Man Randy Savage. And he would just name, all he could say is just 80s wrestlers. And we're like, so you remember Nikolai Volkov? Yes. You know, Iron Sheik? Yeah. So all we could, just the whole ride back was just 80s wrestling guys.
Are they NBA fans in Hong Kong? Do they have media of NBA in Hong Kong?
No, there's no.
Is it just
soccer? Yeah, it's all. Their soccer team isn't good at all. No, the Hong Kong is just sort of more of a business-oriented city. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know, it's all like every thing about China is they love, if it's prestigious elsewhere, they consider it prestigious. So, you know, Premier League soccer, and well, this is, you know, this is, we have to like Mercedes because that's a big car in Germany, and this is a prestigious one in Italy, therefore it's big here. Like, it's all sort of status based, and the Middle East is the same way. Yeah, too.
I don't think there's going to be an NBA franchise in Hong Kong anytime soon. Maybe Mexico. I think
well, that's what I was saying. You had distracted me from that. The G League was going to start up a team in Mexico City.
Oh, really? Was,
but the COVID, they canceled the
season. Was it an offshoot for Dallas or San Antonio?
No, it was its own standalone franchise.
All right.
In the G League, Mexico City, I believe, was supposed to get a franchise and start up in 2020. Yeah,
get some ACB people to go over there, you know, during the off season. Because the EuroLeague and the NBA are not always synced up in terms of when they play. So that actually kind of worked.
Well, the EuroLeague also plays a ton less games, and you know, the EuroLeague is all because also the countries have their own individual That's like the NBA saying, okay, Eastern Conference, you're playing your Eastern Conference games. Now you're going to play all the NBA and all the other conferences and divisions. And it's really, they have, you know, subdivisions. So EuroLeague is just, you know, Real Madrid still has to play the Spanish league.
I usually just follow Fran Fraschilla on Twitter and he explains it to me. And you.
There are some players that give you.
Someone will get drafted in the second round, and they'll be like, "Yes, he was on the second tier of the French league, but he was like dominating that tier." And I'm like, "Okay, great. I don't know what any
what
of this
does that mean." Yeah, it's like he played for Creighton. Oh, now I get you.
So those NBA journeymen or star college players that wind up going there. There was a guy, Ish Wainwright, I think, wound up playing because he was he played at Afro League and he was like awesome. But I remember him at Baylor. So
that's the thing is you will always if you just go deep dives on Wikipedia, you go to the rosters. It's like I remember that guy. Oh, this guy, Anthony Randolph from LSU. He won the EuroLeague championship like 4 years ago with Luka, I believe.
Pete Michael was a stud in the EuroLeague for a while. I remember him because he played with Kenyon Martin in Cincinnati with DeMar Johnson.
CJ McCollum's brother, Eric McCollum, was a Chinese league. Like, I mean, Steph Marbury.
We're going to talk about one of the McCollums.
So there you go. That's a perfect segue with the McCollum. These are teams where we've already did the ground floor. This is where you are. These are teams just a tad bit better, but these are
a little bit of a nicer view, but you're on the same floor.
But it's really transitional. Like you're not good enough to be good, but you're not bad enough to be bad. So this is a real like.
Well, if you're the Portland Trailblazers, the first team we're going to talk about, because you have a superstar that needs to be happy. And by happy, you mean winning big. This is not a good spot to be in.
No, the Portland Trailblazers, you have your star player who's like, I don't want to leave. I like it here. I'm good. Just get people around me. And every year it's like, well, no, we can't. Well, it's the coach's fault. Well, you think it might just be the GM and you need to trade one of your two star players to make the team as a whole better. Like you had every year was just they have a complete hard ceiling. Like they're not going to be better than this, and they always overachieve. They always play, you know, played Denver to seven games, mm-hmm. But
seemingly, yeah.
And
we're not piling on McCollum, CJ McCollum. He's a terrific player. He's probably worth the money he gets, which is around 30 mil, which sounds like a lot, but
no,
CJ McCollum is a really good player. He averaged 23 points and 5 assists a game.
He is a great player. He is just your only asset. So if your job is to make one of your two stars happy, you need to trade the other star. Mm-hmm. You can't make a big three.
That's what the Raptors did with DeMar DeRozan when they had Kyle Lowry. They flipped DeRozan for an unhappy Kawhi Leonard, and they turned it into a champion.
Because you couldn't add Kawhi to DeRozan. Like, right. You don't have the pieces to do it. You had to
flip them.
You had to break those two up, and the same thing you have here because it's one of those, like, we've done nothing, but we're all out of ideas. The people, you know, they let Melo was old. You weren't going to keep him, but you let Collins go. You let Cantor go. You let Derrick Jones go. Those aren't people that were making anything good. And your big move of the year, you trade for Norman Powell, and then he has you over a bucket because
you have to re-sign him in order to show to Lillard that you want to stay good.
You can't
let Powell walk. Now you're basically telling Lillard, we don't want to be good.
Exactly. And we're going to be in rebuilding mode. So he got, you know, 5 years, $90 million, all guaranteed, which is way too much for him. But he was in the position where they had to do what they had no choice. And just the pieces they add, you know, Larry Nance, who people are higher on him than I am, and I don't quite understand.
His money's okay. It was actually right on the same line as Derrick Jones Jr., who wound up being part of that trade where they got Nance Jr. He just had an extra year, whereas I don't think Derrick Jones Jr. did. So they're adding on a little more money in a later year. The other additions were Ben McLemore, Cody Zeller, and Tony Snell.
Yeah,
and then on minimum expansion money. And then Marquise Chris on minimum money.
Like, that's just – and then Dennis Smith Jr. to a
– training camp deal.
Training camp
deal. We'll see if he makes it. Yeah.
But that's – you have absolutely no reason. Your team did not get better at all adding Zeller, McLemore, and Snell.
The biggest change was the head coach. They fired Terry Stotts. I guess someone had to be the fall guy for another playoff failure, and he was the guy. But he had been coaching there for 8 years, and now it's Chauncey Billups. There was a little bit of attrition about it because there was accusations about Billups in his past that had to be taken out of the way, but a lot of people think that Portland didn't really properly vet it because they just wanted to hire Billups because Lillard wanted Billups is the story. But
allegedly he did, but then he was like, I guess when the negative PR came, he was like, I'm not so sure. And he's going to be a coach soon. You already knew what this was, and it's just people who just want to be angry at the sake of being angry. But you look at this team, like, nobody on that team, no backup, like, is like, oh, wow, they're going to do something. Like, you have Nance, who, okay, we said is going to be the sixth, him or Covington will be the sixth man. But after him, Snell, McLemore, Anthony Simmons, Nasir Little, Marquise Chris, none of those people are like, oh, wow, they're going to be good. It's just like, yeah, this team is Lillard, McCollum, and lots of nothing else.
42 wins last year. The projected win total is at 44.5. They would have actually had around 48 wins with that percentage last year. So it's kind of like it's almost right on line with what they would have done last year. So I guess what Vegas is thinking with that win total at 44.5 is that Lillard is going to stick it out for the year. And I would be shocked, Adam, if Lillard just up in the midseason says, you know what, it's not working, I want to go.
I don't think he's going to do that because I think McCollum will be traded halfway through. I think he will be
And no disrespect, McCollum, they're going to get a haul for him. But that's the point. The point is you got to have a big fish and dangle it out there so that you can get something in return, something really good in return that'll satisfy Lillard. And Lillard is not going to be voluntarily traded. That is not going to happen.
No, and there's no reason for him to do so. The same thing, as I mentioned the previous episode, like with Beal. He's happy there. It's not the disgruntled superstar. I want
to
trade him.
Conference finals. He wants
it's
to
like,
be.
Look, I just want to win. Give me a team to win.
But what do the Blazers have to do to get to that level? That's the question.
You have to essentially blow up the team. We mentioned with Toronto, that's what you have to do is, you know, they were always it was the logical, you know, why don't they just trade McCollum for Simmons? Ben Simmons, can Lillard play with Ben Simmons? Yeah, because Lillard's going to be taking the shot anyways.
And Ben Simmons is not the only option because we talked about this in a previous show. The new dynamic when it comes to bringing in stars, it's not through emptying out your cap space for free agency. It's having enough assets to throw into a package to bring a superstar over the way that the Nets did with James Harden. That's the way that you do it because players want to have all their money maxed out with the original team so they re-sign there, which we've seen a lot of, and then they can ask for a trade later and keep their money. And that's what's going to happen. So if McCollum has to be put into a trade with another, not just Ben Simmons, let's just throw a name like a Karl Anthony Towns or a Devin Booker or somebody like that, they can make it work. They can make the numbers work from a percentage standpoint.
Because no team is going to be like, all right, want to give up Towns? Well, oh yeah, we want Powell and Nance
and
Nurkic.
Joseph Nurkic. Right? No, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to. Those two cannot play in this. You know, we said a couple of years ago with Wall and Beal. It's like, well, you can't have those two together with the team getting better. You need other different pieces, and I don't see how they get 44.5 this year.
What do you think about? That's what I was going to ask you about the wins, like before I cut you off.
I just think it's an under because we mentioned how Memphis is getting better. We mentioned how Golden State will now be in the playoffs. So they're just going to leapfrog them. And I have them on the mezzanine just sort of moving down because they were on the second floor.
They're not a bad team. They're not even an average team. I'd say they're an above average team.
They're above average team, but the fact that you're in the West, you're pushed down.
And I'm curious to see how Billups coaches, like what the approach is. Is it going to be defense? Their defense last year was, really, really bad. Like, let me look at just kind of like,
and that's the wild card with a new coach, especially
29th in defensive efficiency and also dead last in assists. But guess what? If you still have Lillard and McCollum and Anthony Simons, your assist rate's not going to get better. Let's be real.
No, none of those players, and you know, they made their attempts there. They got their developmental picks in Simons and Nasir Little, who
yeah.
Little's been really disappointing. Like, remember he was all the high school rage, and then all of a sudden underwhelmed at UNC. Then
I'm spitballing. Maybe because Billups came from that Detroit team that won the title, they'll try to share the ball more. Maybe that'll be a little bit more ball movement. Will be the idea. You think so?
Question, you know, the thing about Billups is everybody was so, oh, you know, he's awesome, as you know, he's gonna be a coach. He only, you know what, had 1 year as an assistant coach, and that was with the Clippers,
mm-hmm.
who also had Sam Cassell, and everyone's like, well, Sam Cassell should be a head coach too. So,
and Lou was an assistant there before Rivers was fired, and then he got promoted as the head coach.
So it's one of those, like, how much of an assistant was he? Or, you know, they had to have liked him. And obviously Lillard, you want the same way Jason Kidd keeps getting a job, and you know, Steve Nash, the point guard. Point guards want other point guards as their coach because they understand it a little better, as opposed to, you know, you get the big man, the former big man coach, who's like, well, we need to slow it down, we need this.
Yeah, play more defense and stuff like that.
Yeah, so
Jason Kidd. Yeah, go ahead.
It's gonna be interesting to see what approach Billups will take, since A, he's the point guard, so they naturally want to do a fast tempo, but then he came from Detroit with the slow tempo system. So his style is going to be very curious, to say the
it's
least.
One of those things we'll probably know right away. Jason Kidd already got his shot as a head coach in Brooklyn and Milwaukee, and he went as an assistant with the Lakers. Now he's back in the head coach position with the Dallas Mavericks. Rick Carlisle, let's be real. Rick Carlisle was not fired. Rick Carlisle quit because he knew that he was next on the chopping block in Dallas.
Yes, we are moving to Dallas. One quick mm-hmm. Portland note. We mentioned the Billups. Scott Brooks, assistant coach.
Okay. That'll improve the offense a little bit.
So it's one of those, you have some sort of stability there. You have the veteran guy. Dallas is just sort of a complete, I don't know, they are half shoot themselves in the foot, half.
All the drama is at the top. It's not really the roster.
It was all behind the scenes, and players don't like, you know, the management was weird and shady. Then there was other weird, shady management. And now you got a new coach, you got a new GM. Everybody's all, you know, Luka was just, you know, they just hit gold, and Luka and the fact that he's this good, not surprising, but
like 28 points, 8 rebounds, almost 9 assists.
They made,
not only that, he got a super max extension because he was all NBA 2 of the first 3 years of his career. So he got 5 years, $207 million.
The problem with him is he was so good, he made that team better, and that team is just not good. And we mentioned, you know, you have to go for trades, and Dallas is always the one to take that leap, and they did so with Porzingis, and it hasn't really paid off because, unfortunately, he's not that player.
His knee injuries have really hurt him down the stretch. Yes, I agree.
But just that rest of that roster, like, you're trying to will yourself with Tim Hardaway and Maxi Kleber. We like Maxi. He's a no. Dorian Finney-Smith. These aren't players. They're like, oh my god, I need to have them be starting or the top of the, you know, they're my sixth and seventh men. They're not that. And just another problem I have with Dallas is just, you got way too many bigs in this roster.
Yeah, they got a loaded front court for sure. So, like, I don't understand the infatuation with Dwight Powell. Now, financially, you kind of have no choice because I don't think he's an attractive, like, trade chip, and he's at $11 million a year for the next 2 years, so he's kind of stuck there. But if he's your starting center, you know, whatever, you bring back Willie Cauley-Stein, Boban is back. You wound up with Moses Brown in some type of a trade.
Richardson.
Yeah, and I kind of like Moses Brown. Kleber's a shooter. Porzingis, just because of his loss in mobility, he's kind of stuck at the four. You can't really play him in that 3-4 unicorn spot anymore. You like Reggie Bullock going there, though. You think he can give him some defensive
intensity?
Reggie Bullock
is a great upgrade over Josh Richardson, because Bullock is just, he will space out the floor. You need to get players who are complementary to your superstar.
Richardson was just a bad fit in
Dallas. And that's what it was, is Bullock is a much better fit with Luka being that point forward, and he will space it. Josh Richardson could not space anything. So, and then Tim Hardaway is just a shooting machine. Oh, you give me the ball, I'm just going to shoot it. Okay, no. But other than that, you don't have anybody on this team, and they just sort of, they've overachieved for so long. And I just see Jason Kidd as a complete step backwards.
I think they're going to go all in offensively. We were talking about how with Billups, we're not sure what the approach is with Portland. I think with Dallas, with Jason Kidd, it's going to be all Luka all the time. We're going to push, 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 and we're going to up the pace. They were 25th in pace. That's going to go up. And they're going to probably sag a little bit on defense because, you know, Carlisle was a guy who liked to balance out the offense of the defense. I don't think that's going to happen with this Dallas team. I think they're going to really push offensively. They had a great – they had a very efficient offensive team the last 2 years. I can see it happening again where they just say, look, that's our bread and butter. Luka's our guy. We're just going to ride him until the wheels fall off.
But that's, you know, hopefully it's one of those things like, did he learn something from his stint in Milwaukee, because you have the exact – I don't want to say problem is what they did in Milwaukee was they just gave, okay, Giannis, here's the ball. You going to develop any plays? No, he'll figure out what to do with it. So if you have that lazy approach.
And I think their cap, and I think their cap group can work. I know there's going to be a huge bump for Luka, which is going to kind of blow up that back to the right near that like salary cap level. But I think Tim Hardaway still, even though he got Tomori Jr., I think he's still a tradable deal. I think it's a very similar situation when he signed with New York the first time where he, you can move him. Like, I don't think he's a terrible player at all. I think 4 years, $74 million is a lot, but I don't think he's like unmovable. Dwight Powell at $11 million is unmovable.
And the coaching roster, which I'm focusing a lot on coaching with this
team. So many changes, right? Because you have all these ex players who don't have experience. You need an experienced coach behind them.
The assistant lineups is assistant coaches. I mean, you have Daryl Armstrong, who's been the assistant coach there forever.
Mm-hmm.
You got Jared Dudley.
Yeah,
God, Sham retired. God.
Oh, then, wow. The Sham God.
He was player development. He's now an assistant coach.
I did not know that. Wow.
And they got,
God, Sham God was such a legend in street ball that there is a move that everyone in the NBA where you basically fake a dribble and you dribble it back the other way. And it's called the Sham God.
Yep, and he just never was able to translate that. But it's a very – there's not really much –
Jamal Mosley left also for Orlando, so that's another hit. Because he was probably the most valued assistant they had.
Yeah, but he was the – sort of the crux of the
– the breakup between Carlisle and Cuban and
– Yeah, and then – so it's,
I don't remember that other guy's name, but it was the shadow GM.
And so, yeah, now you have this whole weird dynamic. You have – former players essentially are your coaches. They got it was an NBA assistant. He coached in Turkey last year. He's back in the NBA this year. But it's just a weird, like, again, you have the front office. That's very weird. Okay, here's your new coach. Okay, here's weird assistant players that he may or may not have picked himself.
Yeah, Armstrong's gonna have to really help out a lot there since he's at I think he coached for the team that won the title in 2011.
Yes, he did. And yeah, Jared Dudley was just playing with the Lakers last year, was he not?
Yeah, very valuable, but he's a valuable mind. Like, he's very well respected. And also, Kidd, obviously, we talked about, he assisted with the Lakers, so him and Dudley are tight. So I can see that. 47.5 win total. That's actually right at the mark. Like, they had 48. They were going to be at 48 wins if it was 82 games. This is close. I hate when Vegas does this and they get a good number like that. I'd go a little bit over. I'd probably go over, but I'm not confident.
I have to take the under because Dallas was always one of those teams like you would like they're going to overachieve. They're going to overachieve. They don't have that overachieving Carlisle factor anymore. So I have to fall.
Also, what can Luka do to calm down with the technical fouls? Because that might hurt him in the playoffs.
And yeah, that's another thing is, yeah, you start losing him for games. Those are just easy L's now.
It is well known for those who don't know, it is well known among NBA referees now that Luka is a big crybaby. He cries about every call.
Mm-hmm. And the team will hit, obviously, if Luka goes out, this is just a 20-win team, if that.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is on his health, so it's very...
Yeah, you don't, like I was saying, do it till the wheels fall off if you want to run faster, but you don't want to do it too hard to the point where he's injured. Because now if you got an injured Luka, or who he has to miss time, and then you have an oft-injured Porzingis who has to take the lead, which he might be able to, that's going to be doom for them, to be honest.
Well, you can't go too fast because you have Porzingis and 27 centers on this team who can't run fast, period.
And we talk about their lack of depth, right? Not only that, with the front load, the loaded bigs, but like you don't have that much depth in terms of two-way players. Dorian Finney-Smith is not going to be there forever.
Thankfully.
Is he? He's in his last year, I think.
But he somehow has made it this long. But it could just be one of those things, like maybe Dallas had never been a stockpiling team. Okay, hey, we got to go to bigs. Hey, you need a big? Give us one of your, we'll trade big for small. So who knows? With this new weird GM, new weird coach, whole new thing. That's why, again, I put them in the mezzanine. They're sort of, they could fall either way. Mm-hmm. But another interesting tale.
Yeah, yeah. And then last question. Do you think, Mark, you made the right decision of letting Rick Carlisle walk, not talking him into coming back? Do you think they needed to shake up?
You needed to shake things up because... It was Luka is the new.
And you don't want to alienate Doncic. I get that.
It's one of those you have to either go all in with Luka and do things now him and his people want, or the old system wasn't going to work forever. Plus, especially when he's getting old, it's like, well, you can't. This isn't going to be a pop. It's going for another 20 more years.
I don't think LaMelo Ball is at that spot yet with the Charlotte Hornets, who we're talking about next. I don't think he's at that Zion, Luka, I'm calling the shots level. I can see in a couple of years him being that way. He really gave a good punch of adrenaline to the Hornets before the injuries really hurt them, where like Hayward went out and then LaMelo Ball had a wrist injury that kind of took him out late.
Yeah, when
got in the play-in, but they lost to Indiana.
When didn't Hayward go out is the question.
You're just mad because you're a Celtics fan and he bailed on you guys.
No. The first, he didn't bail. It was just one of those.
He left. He went to Charlotte in a sign and trade.
Yeah, because Charlotte was going to give him more money and more years. So.
And he got it. He got $30 million a year for the next 3 years.
Everyone's like, well, you're sort of fragile. Nope. Okay, no, there was sort of no hard feelings because he didn't live up to his potential. He had such high potential coming to Boston that it fizzled out because when he came back, Brad Stevens tried too hard to push with him and it just didn't work. But I'm just going to say quickly about LaMelo Ball. No, it's not going to be like Zion because LaVar Ball doesn't have that clout anymore because he blew it all on Lonzo.
Yeah, we're not in the big baller. We're not in the big baller league.
Yeah, his credibility was shot with that, and it didn't work well.
You know, LaVar did get his "I told you so" moment with LaMelo a little bit. Now, but Lonzo, we always knew. Lonzo got paid too in Chicago.
Lonzo got paid, but we always knew that LaMelo was the best of the three. That was always the talk of.
I agree with that.
Kid is good, but you have this high school sophomore or junior who's going to be better than both of them combined. We knew the middle one was just nothing. So
51 games, 16 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.6 steals. Like, that is excellent for a rookie. Excellent.
Yeah, it is a complete player. It's not like, you know, the difference between him and Edwards. It's just, well, Edwards is a shooter. He's going to shoot. LaMelo is like, no, I'm going to be a floor general, which that team desperately needed. The problem now is with Charlotte is, well, here we are, this playoff team. We're adding money. And just all their moves are just like... They upgraded, but I don't.
New pieces fit, you mean?
It's not really. They're not. They seem to be in the ceiling territory.
So, in terms of their total roster from last year, the biggest losses were probably Cody Zeller, who had been there for a while and he had signed an extension. And then when the extension expired, he just kind of walked away and he wound up with the aforementioned, I believe, Portland Trailblazers. The other one was Devontae Graham, who wound up going to the Pelicans because they just didn't want to pay him. He was a second round pick, restricted free agent type of thing. So it was going to be hard for him to fit the money in, especially with Hayward. The other thing that is interesting is that they do look like they have a lot of cap room so that next year they would be able to like fit a big star. But the problem is that you re-upped Terry Rozier in the offseason, he's going to get a pretty big pay raise at 4 years, $97 million. So his rate goes up from like $18 million to somewhere around $24 or $25. So that's where kind of a lot of that extra money goes. And you also have restricted free agency coming up for Miles Bridges, who's a really – I don't want to – I'm high – I've talked about him on the show. I'm high on him. A lot of people know him as a highlight reel. He had he probably had the dunk of the year over – I think it was Clint Capella. Like, absolutely nasty dunk. But he's talented.
Yeah, and then you have P.J. Washington, who's just – silently a solid player. But you know, like I said, they did upgrade. You have
they lost Malik Monk. I didn't mention him.
He was the great disappointment. He was supposed to be their shooter. He's supposed to be their two of the future.
That's
didn't
why
do
they
anything.
Drafted James Bouknight, right?
Yeah, and that's also the thing is you draft Bouknight, but you gave Terry Rozier this big money and you gave LaMelo Ball this big money. So it's like why are you getting another
backcourt is it's almost like I wouldn't say a Lillard McCollum situation. That's super max and max. This is
Rozier getting that money. It's like, okay, that's a little bit of very much of an overpay. Miles Bridges, you said, you know, he's going to be getting paid as well.
Do you think he'll get negotiated before the season's over, or do you think before the season starts, or do you think he's going to have to wait it out?
I think he's going to have to wait it out. Then just the problem is you have, you know, Mason Plumlee is here now center, and for a team who hasn't had centers or hasn't had...
I'm not high on Mason Plumlee because even defensively, Charlotte was solid, like 11 the points allowed, 11 the three-point percentage defense. Mason Plumlee defensively to me is not very good.
But he is an upgrade over Cody Zeller, so that's why I said they did upgrade on all fronts, but how good are these upgrades? And you managed to get Kelly Oubre, who's just disappointed sort of everywhere, but he has big potential, like six-man potential in this one. He is just going to be straight second unit. There is no starting point time for him at all.
And also, he can fill in for that three spot if Hayward's injured. Which is eventual, let's be honest with you. The other one that was kind of a plug-in was that because they they lost who was the backup point guard that they lost? Devontae Graham to New Orleans. They bring in Ish Smith.
Ish Smith is just a straight up backup. He will give you 15 20s, but you don't need Ish Smith if you have Terry Rozier. You just put Bouknight in and Oubre with Bridges as your wings. So you have a full court, a full team to play with, a full depth. Or if somebody goes down, the question is just what can you do if and when Hayward goes down? Because it's only a matter of time before it does.
You play Oubre, like I had mentioned, and then you kind of go a little smaller with maybe PJ Washington at the five, go a little faster with Ball. You know, they were 20th in pace. I guess they were just feeling it out to see how Ball plays. If he starts to really get a wrap on his skills, maybe they can go a little faster, would be my guess. When Hayward plays, you can't go fast. They never did in Utah. They didn't in Boston. They're going to have to – that you have to play at his rate, because when he's sort of like the ball hogger at the three, kind of in that mellow spot, you can't like really, really ramp up the speed. You have to give him some time to like bring like back down the defender and get an open shot.
So as we end every episode here, which team has the most potential? This is going to be a very super loaded question because this is why this tier was created.
Because here's the thing, like if who's got the most potential, you're asking me which team can be a contender.
Who can move up to contender and who can move down to just the lobby?
Well, a team that could probably move down just by default, I think, is Charlotte, just because even though they have a lot of potential, like we talked about, they're super duper young. They did lose some pieces, like Graham and Zeller and Monk. I'm not saying that they were like super duper important, but they did help out, you know, and you plugged
in. And
East
did get better.
And yeah, even though they upgraded, like you said, the East got better. And that was kind of where I was getting to. When it comes to moving up, Dallas. Dallas, I think, could be really good as long as Luke is healthy. And if Porzingis can really show, I am not washed up, I can still play. Portland is a giant, giant question mark. I just really don't know.
Oh, yeah. If Porzingis can come back and be like, you know, comeback player of the year, that team is going to be so
MIP
awesome.
Kind of thing, yeah. I don't know if he'd be an MIP average. You know, maybe we're harsh on Porzingis. Like, you know, his numbers were somewhere around 20 points, 9 rebounds, and he averaged 1.4 blocks.
But he couldn't do back-to-backs, and he
can't play defense.
Play defense, and it's just he was, you know, you need somebody. Maybe that's why they have 27 centers, because
Porzingis just has to be sort of a two guard. He has to be a 7'2" wing. But
he was able, he got away with that a time or two in New York, but then the knee injury really took him out of it. So, but yeah, but yeah, it's like I do like Dallas in that situation. They were already at that 48 win mark. I could see a situation where if Dallas gets to 50 wins, that they could hover around the 4 or 5 seed, and you're kind of in the you're kind of at the you're in that conversation.